Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the second of six classes in the Discovering Buddhism module on karma. Let's see, who is here tonight who was not here last week? Okay. And how many of y'all are here for the very first time tonight? Anyone? Okay. Good. Well, I don't think you'll have any problems catching up with the rest of us. So let's begin with some meditation. I think everyone here is a somewhat experienced meditator by this stage. We begin, as always, by checking our posture. Our back is nice and straight. A little bit straighter than we normally sit. Our head is straight on our shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other. Maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Our eyes either lightly closed or just very slightly open. If we leave our eyes open a little bit, they're not focused, but they're just looking out a body's length in front of us. A little bit of light comes in. Our jaw is loosely closed, not clenched. Our tongue is on the gum behind our upper teeth. Our shoulders are down and a little bit back so that our chest opens up a little bit. Our upper arms are away from our torso, and our hands are right on left with thumbs touching, slightly below the navel, or one hand on each knee. Either position is fine. If we're sitting on a cushion, we're towards the front of the cushion so that our pelvis opens up a little bit and our knees are down. If we're sitting in a chair, we're a little bit towards the front of the chair, not leaning back on it, with a cushion underneath our feet if we wish. And the point of the posture is stability, a posture that once we become familiar with, we don't have to think about it, so that we can concentrate on our meditation. So just kind of scan your body from the head on down. See if you find any sources of tension or discomfort. And go ahead and wiggle them out now or scratch or whatever you need to do as you settle into the meditation posture. And to help settle our minds as we begin the meditation, we'll do a very simple version of what's called the nine-round breathing. This kind of breathing has an influence on the energy channels in the body that are connected to the mind, so that the breathing actually helps the mind to stabilize. So we begin by taking our right index finger, closing our left nostril, and we'll do three deep breaths in and out through the right nostril with the stomach expanding on the in-breath so that our diaphragm is pulled down and our lungs really expand. And then as we exhale, the stomach pulls back in towards our spine. So three breaths through the right nostril. Now we use the index finger to close the right nostril. Three breaths in and out through the left nostril. And now 3 breaths in and out through both nostrils. And now we set our motivation. Our motivation for doing the meditation that's to follow and for participating in the discussion and the reflection that are part of this class this evening. We all had a choice of lots of things we could have done tonight. But for some reason, we chose to come to Kadampa Center and to talk and think and meditate on the subject of karma. And whatever has motivated us to do that is fine. If it's just curiosity, great. If it's just a sense of wanting to develop a little bit of peace and quietness in our mind, that's wonderful. But in this tradition, it's said that the greatest motivation is everything we do, even something as simple as coming here for an hour and a half, is motivated by the wish to develop our mind, our mental capacity, so that we can be of greater benefit to all living beings. And that includes ourselves. We're not leaving ourselves out. It's not self-sacrifice. Develop our mind so that we can benefit ourselves and everyone, our family, our friends, our co-workers, and ultimately everyone, both those that we come into contact with and even people that we never encounter. And that's referred to as the bodhicitta motivation, the motivation of the great mind, said to be the most powerful motivation and gives the most meaning to our actions. So as much as just sit for a minute and think along those lines. It may be hard to swallow. You may not really believe it, but just thinking that way for a moment is said to be extremely beneficial. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation, a simple concentration meditation in which we place our consciousness on the physical sensation of the breath, the tactile sensation of the breath moving in and out through the nostrils, mind on breath. Nothing more than that. And every time we notice the mind has wandered off to a sound or a physical feeling or a memory or a plan, we set that aside. We don't get angry with ourselves or irritated. We set that aside and come back to the breath over and over and over again. And that's our concentration meditation, developing the mind's natural ability to concentrate. Mind on breath, nothing more than that. And now, as we begin our meditation with a motivation, we end with the dedication. Those are the two bookends we always put on our meditations. We give ourselves a mental pat on the back, acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the ordinary, and we dedicate the positive imprint that this has made on our mind stream to the benefit of all living beings. So finish your meditation by just thinking in that way for a moment. Any questions or comments about that meditation practice? Okay. So we'll continue our discussion of karma. Tonight we'll go back and talk about the four laws of karma that I introduced last week in more detail. First, to review a little bit, what does the word karma mean?
Action.
Yeah, if you don't remember anything else from this class, remember that. And what are we referring to when we talk about action? Everything we do, everything our body does, everything we say, and everything we think, no matter how insignificant it seems. Each of these is an action. And these actions, we could say, make an imprint or affect our mind or help create our mind such that they determine our future experience of reality. Everything we're experiencing now is a result of our past actions of body, speech, and mind. And you can just, if you want to put it in, you know, I don't like to think of this as being necessarily all that mystical or strange. I think we all have the experience that if we think a lot of angry thoughts, we have an angry mind. The nature of our thoughts determines our mind, and if we have an angry mind, we go through life looking for more reasons to be angry. We could say in some way that karma is just the habits that we're developing. What kind of mind are we creating? If we create an angry mind, it will inevitably experience both being angry and seeing anger in other people in the future. If we create a mind that's loving and kind, we are loving and kind towards other people, and we see that same quality in them. And I certainly think we all have the experience of coming across people in our lives who just never seem to have an enemy or anyone they dislike. Is it because they're just lucky and they only meet nice people, or because they have created a mind that can only perceive nice people? We'll talk about this a little bit more. But it's really, I want to emphasize this over and over. To me, the way I think about karma, it's a psychological phenomenon. It's not some mystic out there sort of thing. It's what is happening in our own mind. Okay? So, we'll talk about the four laws of karma. This is not real clear. Let me try a different one. Yeah, that's better. Of karma. Like I said last week, this is not something the Buddha invented or dreamed up. This is his observations of reality. Sitting under the Bodhi tree, this is what he found. And the first law of karma, well, anybody remember what that was?
Definite.
Karma is definite. Okay. Which means that there's no flexibility, there's no wiggle room, there's no iffiness in karma. And what we mean by it's definite, that we say virtuous actions always lead to happiness. Non-virtuous actions always lead to suffering. Lots of loaded terms there. Sometimes instead of virtuous, they'll use the word positive. And sometimes instead of non-virtuous, they'll use the word negative. Because we're dealing with translations from the Sanskrit and Tibetan and things like that. Okay, so what does that mean? Excuse me. What's a virtuous action?
Generosity.
Okay. Or more broadly, okay, that's an example. What determines if an action is virtuous? That's kind of what they're saying. A virtuous action does make you happy, yes. That's kind of a tautology in this situation. What determines if an action is virtuous? If I put a penny in a beggar's cup, is that automatically a virtuous action? Who says no?
I say no.
Okay. Why?
Because your motivation
yeah.
is dictating
the whether an action is virtuous or not is determined by your motivation. Okay? And actions that are motivated by generosity, patience, ethics, but generally actions motivated by compassion, the wish that beings be happy, are considered to be virtuous actions. Okay? The motivation is everything. That's why we set our motivation when we do a meditation. Okay, it said that the Buddha, there's actually a story of the Buddha killing someone out of compassion. His motivation was, compassion. So in that example, that was a virtuous action. Okay, we'll talk about this more next week. For most of us, killing would not be a virtuous action. Okay, but the motivation is the key determinant in whether an action is virtuous or not. An action motivated by compassion, the wish that others or the wish that yourself, because you can include yourself, be free of suffering, makes the action virtuous. Okay, in the same way, you know, we can put a dollar into a beggar's cup because we want to look good in someone's eyes. It can be done out of pride. So in that example, it would not be considered a primarily virtuous action. Of course, most of us in our present state of confusion, our motivation is generally mixed. You know, there will be some compassion, but there will also be some selfishness. So it's really, and you know, don't beat yourself up about that. That's just where we are. Our motivations are mixed, but virtuous actions, the more they're motivated by compassion, the more virtuous they are. Okay? So virtuous actions, those motivated by compassion, always lead to happiness. Whose happiness?
Everybody.
So if I do all sorts of compassionate actions, I'm going to make you happy. Is that a guarantee? Is that a fact?
Yes.
Oh. You're very strong in your conviction, but you're wrong according to the Buddha. Okay. Virtuous action leads to my happiness. Will make me happy. I can't, you know, I want to make other people happy, but that's not in my power. I mean, I cannot, there is no guarantee that my virtuous actions are going to cause someone else's happiness. The only person's happiness that I can create the cause for is my own. Okay? So virtuous actions lead to my happiness. Okay? Anything that I do as virtue will result in happiness for myself. It may result in happiness for others, but there's no guarantee about that because you're working out your own karma, and I can do all sorts of virtuous actions, but if you don't have the karma to be happy, it's not going to work. Okay? This is kind of a hard one to wrap your mind around because it seems a little bit contradictory. But any virtuous action I do will result in happiness for me at some point in the future. Okay? That is definite. Okay? We don't see that. We see lots of times where we really do something to help someone and they just kick us in the face. Okay? And the Buddha would say we're making a false assumption that being kicked in the face is a result of doing that virtuous action. Okay? The Buddha is saying we may not see it immediately, but anytime we do something virtuous, it will lead to happiness in the future. Okay? And I think there are a couple of questions, maybe a question or two. Yeah?
I'm just wondering if the motivation is happiness. Is that selfish?
The wish that I be happy, i.e. free of suffering, is not selfish. Okay? The wish that I be happy at the expense of others is. Okay, so again, it gets back to our motivation. But this is a very important point. There is nothing wrong or selfish about wanting to be happy. As Holiness the Dalai Lama frequently starts his teachings off with that, say, we all want to be happy. That's part of the human condition or the sentient being condition. There is nothing wrong or selfish about that if it's done in a way, if it's not done at the expense of others. Okay? Certainly the most happiness comes from actions that are motivated by, as I said, the bodhicitta motivation, the wish that everyone be happy. But if we can say, I'm doing this so I won't suffer, if it's not done at the expense of others, there's nothing wrong or selfish or greedy about that. Okay? The wish to be happy is, as Holiness uses this word, he says it's completely valid. It's a completely valid aspiration. Okay? The problem is we're very confused about what happiness is. Okay? But he says, the wish to be happy is completely valid. And we all have that, and there's nothing wrong with that. We're just going about the wrong way. Okay? Let's see. Did you have a question here? Yeah.
Thing that I was thinking is that if you're actually trying to be happy at the expense of someone else, you really can't be happy.
Yeah, that's really not a compassionate motivation.
You're not ever going to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's self-defeating. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Let's see, back of the room.
I'm so confused because this, I might not be getting it, but maybe you can help me. So if there is a bear attacking a baby and I kill the bear, is that a virtuous?
A bear attacking? Well, determines about what's your motivation.
To save the baby.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I'll throw this one open for discussion. Yeah, that's a good question. Is the baby worth more than the bear? From the Buddhist point of view?
No.
That's kind of a trick question. In some ways, you know, we say the baby has more potential, possibly, to become enlightened in this lifetime.
Right.
But the bear and the baby both equally want to be happy, so... In that way, they're similar. When we find ourselves in situations like that, where we don't know what the right thing is to do, we want to do the right thing, but we just have no idea. Do I save the baby? Do I save the bear? The Buddha would say that's lacking wisdom. Okay, and if we develop wisdom, the ability to see reality directly, we would know in that situation which was the more virtuous action to do. Right now, we're just very confused, and we just go with our instincts, which is to save the baby, which very well may be the right answer, but the Buddha may say, if you could look at the karma of the baby in the future and the karma of the bear in the future, the more virtuous action may be to save the bear. Mm-hmm. But that's where we don't know the right thing to do. That's said to be a lack in wisdom, okay? We have the compassion, we want to be good, but we don't know what to do. And, you know, we find that in situations that are a lot less dramatic than choosing between a bear and a baby. You know, do I punish my kid, or do I blah, blah, blah? You know, what's the right thing to do? That's said to be lacking wisdom. Okay? Yeah, other comments? Yeah.
I have to get a little bit more clear about the part where the more compassion involved, the more virtuous the motivation.
Yeah. And that, ask about more compassion, more virtue. Okay. Our motivations right now are, you know, 99% of the time are very mixed.
Right. So
there's maybe compassion, but there may be some selfishness in there.
Yeah. So if the compassion is directed primarily to yourself,
mm-hmm.
being very compassionate to yourself, so you're going to do this virtuous action out of compassion for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically, whatever action you're doing out of compassion, still with that motivation,
mm-hmm.
you're really concerned primarily with the principle of it and not so much concerned with the recipient of the compassion, of the virtuous deed. So whatever that, however which way that person takes the compassion, as long as you're clear that your motivation is...
Exactly.
So you're
yeah.
dealing... You see what I'm
yeah,
saying?
You're dealing with your own mind, your motivation. Because we have no...
Thing.
We have no guarantee how the other person is going to react.
So so you're not even that much concerned with however that person's going to receive this. Because you...
Well, if it's...
If you knew...
you're
coming from this virtual... virtuous action within yourself.
But a lack of concern for others would, if you say, screw the others regardless of the consequences, but even a little, that's going to be non-virtuous. Okay,
yeah,
so it's going to be a mix.
Yeah, but not
okay.
that much.
But I think, you know, doing something, this is,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to relieve some of my suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to hurt anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
As best as I can see in my present
yes,
state of confusion,
that is the right thing to do.
That is a compassionate action. Okay, that is a virtuous action. Okay,
mm-hmm.
but most of the time it's just, you know, it's gray. Mm-hmm. You know, we just have to.
Yeah, but you're working from the principle of the thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If you could stay there, it's pretty safe.
Yeah, sure. It's much better than saying I'm doing this because I want that $1,000 more than anything in the world.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I want to win. You know, I want to beat everybody in this contest. Yeah. Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right over here.
Isn't what you perceive to be a virtuous motivation a product of your previous karma? So, for example, you use the example of punishing a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you do that for the child's benefit, to teach the child.
Mm-hmm.
You do it for your benefit. But so many people engage in violence or abuse because they really believe
yes.
that it's the
yeah.
right thing to do and it will lead to...
Yes. We are, to an enormous extent, under the influence of our past karma, okay? We're not Buddhas. We're confused, but as much clarity as we can get, the better. And that's where our meditation practice and studying, you know, it's said that, you know, to a large degree, we're automatons, just kind of responding to past karma. We're not completely, we have a little bit of will, a little bit of ability to sit and think and determine what's the right thing, but certainly those instincts, those habits we have are the result of past karma. And if we have the habit of being physically abusive, not out of compassion, but just because it's a habit, that is the result of past karma. And we have to work to overcome that. Yeah. Any habits or anything that we have that we think is habitual with us in our way of thinking, way of acting, way of speaking, that's the result of past karma. That's a habit we've developed by acting that way in the past. So it's very easy for us to act that way now. So it's extra hard to break those habits. Okay. Yeah?
Do those actions lead to happiness in the future? Like if you were disciplining a child and you did it in a way that was not right by most practical means, but you believe that to be right for yourself. Or like the bear example, like you went ahead and sold the bear, and you thought that was the right thing to do at the time.
Yeah.
If that's still going to be leading to your motivation was right at the time, but you were doing like an action that was probably inappropriate.
Yeah, I mean, this is where we have to be really honest with ourselves. It's very easy to fool ourselves in saying, I'm doing this for your own benefit. It hurts you more than it hurts me. Or it hurts me more than it hurts you. And actually, we're very clear that it hurts you a whole lot more than it hurts me. And that's the whole part of spiritual practice, is just developing some honesty with ourselves. Like I say, everything's going to be very mixed right now. We have very few purely compassionate actions. The motivation is always mixed, and don't beat yourself up about that. That's just part of being a human being. You know, we're not Buddhas yet, or most of us aren't. Maybe there are a couple Buddhas sitting out there, but our motivations are always going to be very mixed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to be kind of effortful about it, and think about it, and kind of grit our teeth, even if it doesn't seem natural at first. Start to develop. That's what Venerable Robina Korten, who comes here and teaches every year, says. You know, Buddhism, it's just about developing new habits. You know, getting rid of the habits that don't work and developing habits that do work. Developing habits that make us happy. Okay? But the point is that a virtuous action, you know, even if the motivation is mixed, can never lead to suffering for ourselves. We will never cause suffering by acting compassionately. I mean, that's not our experience, because we're making all these false connections. Oh, I did so much for you, and I was just a doormat, and you just rubbed your feet all over me. You know, that's according to the Buddhist point of view, that's not the way it works. If it's truly compassionate, it will lead to happiness. No ifs, ands, or buts. Okay?
So, Robbie, this is, as you say, referring to our own mind.
Yes, and yes.
When somebody's a Buddha, then that's when they can determine whether it will lead to someone else's happiness.
Well, you know, a Buddha cannot make someone else happy.
Oh, okay.
Or the Buddha. They would like to. They want everybody to be happy. Excuse me. But if the Buddha could make other people happy, he would have made us all happy. You know, we'd be living pure bliss. We can't change someone else's karma. Okay? You've got to deal with your own karma. We can do what we think will benefit them. We can teach, which is what the Buddha did. We can share our experience with them. But we cannot make another person happy. Not possible. That person's happiness, your happiness, you create it by doing virtuous actions.
Doesn't that take away the reason of being compassionate, though, partly? Isn't being compassionate wanting to take away or...
Yeah, that's a great question. From the Buddhist point of view, the goal is to want to take away the compassion of others. Okay. Want to take away the suffering of others. To want to have that wish, even though you cannot do it. Okay? But to have the mind that lives to relieve the suffering of others. Okay? To develop that great mind. Because if everybody in the world, which is where we all want to go, had that mind, it'd be great. That everybody wants everyone else to be happy all the time. It'd be pretty hard to fight wars if everybody had that mindset. Yeah, Pat, were you going to say something?
Yes, on Sunday morning prayers, Venerable Lama has made the comment that Lama Zopa Rinpoche is ill because he is working off the karma of his disciples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, is it possible for a master to purify some of the negative karma?
What I would say, my way of interpreting that, and then this is where karma gets really deep, that his students have the karma to perceive their teacher as being ill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm. We don't have the karma to perceive a healthy teacher. We see a teacher who's sick because of our karma. Okay, and then he's manifesting that to show us what we have to work on in our own mind streets out of wisdom, okay? But you really, again, this gets very tricky, but, you know, technically you can't work off someone else's karma.
Okay.
I would say. Okay.
But
if we have a teacher who appears in that way, that is a result of my karma, that Lama Zopa has had a stroke and can't talk well. The Buddhist approach would be, that's my karma to see a teacher who lives that way, who exists in that way. Okay, I've created the karma in the past.
That's clarifying, because that's kind of what I was asking. I had read about masters who take
mm-hmm.
on other people's karma.
Yeah.
But,
anyway, thank you for that. You notice, and again, getting back to the prayers we say on Sunday morning, they're always phrased in terms like, may others be happy.
It's aspirational.
Yeah, it's not saying make others happy, but it's generating that wish in my mind. I want other people to be happy. That's what, you know, the whole question of what do prayers mean in Buddhism when you don't have a God is a whole other issue. But it's certainly an aspiration. It's working with my own mind stream. Yeah, back there.
If you can't change someone else's karma, what about mantras? Very crushed. What about mantras that you say so that it benefits other people and burns off some of their negative, unripe karma?
Yeah. Well, you may not like it, but I don't think you're burning off their karma, okay? But you're saying the mantras to affect your own mind so that your mind can be of greater benefit to them. Okay? But I don't... My interpretation would be, again, we're getting into really deep issues here, is that you cannot do something to purify another person's negative karma. Okay? You can purify your mind so that you can be a benefit to them, so that you have the wisdom to do what's needed, what's always appropriate, what's always kind. Okay?
So, with certain mantras for if somebody looks at you after said this particular mantra, it's supposed to help their negative karma. That's not true.
Don't quote me on that, okay? We're getting into really deep things because this blends over into the whole course on emptiness and how things exist. You know, is my mind determining what's out there or not? So just think about it, okay? But right now, in terms of basic karma, you're dealing with your own karma. Okay, your actions are creating your mind in the future. So in a similar way, non-virtuous actions, which are primarily those motivated by anger and attachment, will always cause me suffering, will cause me to suffer, experience suffer at some point in the future. Every action I do that's motivated by anger or attachment being clinging, will cause me to suffer in the future. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's a definite. Okay? You know, sometimes, you know, sometimes we really try to hurt someone and it just bounces off of them. We have no guarantee that our non-virtuous actions are really going to hurt someone else, but they will definitely hurt us in the future. Okay.
Can we say that actions done without regret can lead to happiness?
Without regret. What do you mean by regret? I mean, I can regret being generous sometimes. Or sometimes I can be very selfish and not have a moment's regret.
Right.
Yeah.
But I guess from the Buddhist point of view, the four opponent powers, you know, we talk about regret to the point that, you know, we regret doing something that's harmful to others.
Yeah, but that involves a certain amount of wisdom. I mean, we can do lots of non-virtuous actions now without regretting them, because we're not that good of Buddhists. But we'll talk about purification in a later class.
Okay. Is everybody clear on this one, the first law of karma? We need to move along.
Virtuous actions always lead to happiness for the person who's doing the action. We don't know what their effect on others is going to be. Non-virtuous actions always cause suffering for the person who's doing the action. Okay? That's just law of karma. Second law of karma is, anybody remember that? Yeah, expandable over time. Okay, expands over time. Very seemingly insignificant actions, you know, just a harsh word or a nasty glance, if we want to look at the negative ones, can over time expand and cause lots of problems in the future. In the same way, a very small, seemingly insignificant act of kindness can lead to great happiness in the future. And this gets into why they tell us we really should have a regular purification practice. If we have any sense that we're doing negative actions, what we want to do is purify them so that they don't ripen over time. And we'll talk about purification more next week. So that's why we need to be constantly aware, develop some insight into what we're doing, both negative and positive. Cultivate the positive, eliminate the negative. Accentuate the positive. Yeah, I guess isn't that how the song goes? Okay? It's like a seed that's planted grows into an oak tree over time. It expands over time. I think that one's pretty straightforward. Any questions about or comments?
Does that also mean that the seeds are constantly being planted on a continuous basis?
Everything we, like I said, everything we think, every single thought we have is a seed that's being planted. Every single thing we say is a seed. Every single thing we do is a seed. So we're planting seeds nonstop. Yeah. Make Johnny Appleseed look like a slacker. We're just planting karmic seeds continuously. Okay? Third one. Okay. What's the third one?
No results without
cause. Okay. No results without cause. Okay. Somebody want to explain what that jargon means? Anybody want to take a stab at that?
You can't experience these things without having in the past created the cause to experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's two parts to this. First one is everything we're experiencing now. And by that I mean everything. The fact that we have a human body. The fact that we came to Kadampa Center tonight. The fact that we have a job. The fact that we're unhappy in our marriage. The fact that we really like our kids. Everything, the good stuff and the bad stuff, all of it we created the cause for in the past. Everything. Every little illness we have, every little cold, every little cough like I've gotten tonight. Everything is the result of our past actions. There is no randomness at all. The good stuff and the bad stuff we have created the cause for in the past. Okay? And this is really the heart of the discussion on karma, I think. There is nothing random. The fact that we live here in Raleigh, North Carolina, that there's a Buddhist center here, that we have a qualified teacher like Geshe Gelug, all of that is the result of karma we've created in the past. It's not just we happen to be in the right place at the right time. That is our karma of body, speech, and mind ripening. Okay? So that's the past. In the same way, looking forward, everything that we experience in the future will be determined by our actions now. What we say, what we think, say and do now is the sole determinant of what we experience in the future. Future happiness. Well, it's not just going to be luck. We have to create the causes for it. We will not experience anything in the future without creating the causes for it. Okay? So karma is determining everything, our karma, what we're experiencing now and what we will experience in the future. If we want to experience suffering, the Buddha's not saying you have to do anything. If you want to experience suffering, just fine with me. Go ahead and create the causes. I don't think that's a very smart choice, but if you want to create the causes for suffering in the future, just act in a non-virtuous manner. But if you want to experience happiness in the future, the only way to experience it, you know, it's not by meeting the right person, it's not by having the right 401k, it's not by living in the right house, it's by doing virtuous actions now. Otherwise, you will not be happy in the future. Yes?
This even, I think, goes down into minutia, like whom you might be passing on the road, or
everything.
The bug that lands on you and bites you.
That's what the Buddha says. Everything.
So any of that. Yeah.
Everything that happens to you. Just the most minuscule things. And from the Buddha, to be a little more technical, it's saying, you have created the mind that experiences that. Okay? The mind that experiences a red car zooming past you on the road, that's because you have put some imprint on your mind stream that causes you to experience that now. Everything about your experience, okay? The fact that you're a human being to a little bug sitting on your arm is determined by past imprints on your consciousness that you have put there. There's no God determining it. There's no randomness. Okay. Just the fact that we have a human, and we'll talk more about this in future classes, the fact that we have a human body is the result of past karma. The fact that we're not a dog or a cat, but a human being, that's the result of past karma. It's not just the way things are. There's a cause for that. There's a cause for everything. Yeah, and then I'll get to, yeah.
Not to get into death heavily, but if our karma runs out, we're done.
That's what they say. We have X amount of karma to live in this human body. And when all that karma has ripened, this human body cannot exist if it has no karma. Okay? Yeah, when the karma runs out, this body...
But any karma that we might have for a different body is still waiting.
Oh, yeah, there's tons. Yeah. And in the same way, if we want to become enlightened in the future, the only way to do it is to create the karma to become enlightened, to have a mind that's completely wise and completely compassionate. We have to create the karma for that. Okay, it's not just a matter of sitting down and reading books. That's not enough karma to become a Buddha. You have to do virtuous actions. Yeah.
I find it just mind-blowing that at the same time that I'm planting a seed for a future karmic action, I could also be the same seed could have ripened from past karma.
Yeah, you're in this situation because of past karma, how you react to it, what seeds you plant. You know, you could be sitting here saying, I'm really pissed off and angry that I'm at Kadampa Center tonight, and be planting some negative seeds on top of what I would think were some positive karma that got you here. So, yeah, you're in a situation.
Action is serving a dual purpose.
Well, it's not the same action in that. Your present situation is a result of past actions. Now you have the choice to some degree. We're not completely free, but we have the choice what kind of seeds we're going to plant now. Yeah. That's where spiritual training comes in. Yeah.
As a Buddhist, are we only just supposed to see this as like a spiritual, philosophical sort of thing? Or also from like a more tangible thing? For example, if I eat well and exercise, those are karmic seeds of me taking better care of myself and I'll physically be better. Or know, if I go to the jungle, there'll be bugs there, and I'm going to get bitten by those bugs. It's actions. Right?
Yeah.
I see it not just as philosophical,
yeah.
I do good, good things happen, I do bad things happen. If I go to X, I'm going to experience.
You could say that the Buddha say you might be misinterpreting things, though. It really all does, from the Buddha's point of view, it does come back to your motivation. Okay? The Buddha would say, the Buddha would say the cause of having a buff body with big muscles and guns and horseshoes and all of that is not going to the gym and working out. In the big view of things, the cause is something in the past that you said, thought, or done to create having that body. We make a false connection between actions. We see karmic connections that don't necessarily exist. I can't understand that, but that's just the Buddha said. The cause of being wealthy is not picking the right stocks. The cause of being wealthy is having been generous in the past, the Buddha would say. Okay, it just looks like, you know, reading the Wall Street Journal every day and day trading is the cause of wealth. The Buddha would say the actual karmic cause is having practiced generosity in the past. But this is where, like I said last week, karma is considered the deepest subject in all of Buddhism. We can't see those connections. Okay?
That one always, because I can't understand it on a deeper level, frightens me, because I feel like you could attribute people's suffering to their past karma, and in a sense, I guess be more complacent about it.
Okay, that's the big question here, okay? Because if we accept this view, everyone's suffering is a result of their actions in the past. Okay? A little child that's born with a horrible disease, from the Buddhist point of view, that's not random. It's not God who's doing it. That is a result of past actions. Okay? But, according to the Buddha, he's saying, understanding that does not diminish your compassion.
Mm-hmm.
It actually increases it. If we see, just as for myself, I'm causing my own suffering, let's see how others are causing their own suffering, even if we can't see an example like that, because you have to believe in past lives. But if we see how people are caught, their own suffering is something that they cause ourselves, that should make us more compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying you're getting what you deserve. It's saying, you're in the same boat that I am. And from lack of understanding and confusion, you are bringing the suffering on yourself. And that makes us even more compassionate, according to the Buddha. But it's a very tricky subject there. If we don't think about it correctly, it can lead to indifference or saying, I don't care, because that's your karma. And that's a very wrong view, if you notice that coming up in your mind. An understanding of karma and how people, in some way that we can't see, actually cause their own suffering should lead to more compassion, because we've been in the same situation ourselves. Let's see, let me go here and then there.
At some point in this class, are we going to discuss burning negative karma?
Yeah.
That to the end,
yeah, karma. That'll be in one of the future classes, okay? Yeah.
I don't like the concept of predetermination.
Mm-hmm.
If it's my karma to show up here tonight and take this class, then at what point am I planting seeds that are going to be doing something in the future or the past? I don't have a problem with that.
That's what I'm saying. We have some free will, but it's not a whole lot right now. As we develop on our spiritual path and develop an understanding of karma and how it affects our mind, then we have more free will and more choice. But most of our lives, we're just going through, being propelled by our karma. We're just reacting. No, we're not making choices. Yeah, there's very little that we have complete free will, according to the Buddha. And just think about it. You know, I'm not saying you have to buy that, but according to the Buddha's point of view, we're being propelled through this life mostly by our past karma. Okay? We have some choice, we have some free will, but not a whole lot. We want to develop that. Let me go back here. Yeah.
And going to your point, though, is something happens to you today. Obviously, it's based on something in the past. But what you can control is how you react to that.
Exactly. But you can't even control that. You have certain mental habits. But, you know, you can sit and say, okay, I usually react this way. But right now, even though it's hard, I'm going to react this way.
And if you're developing that, that's going to create those positive seeds.
Yeah, that's where spiritual practice comes in, so we're not so reactive.
And that's what makes your life better now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The way you react to it, how you handle it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Joey, did you have something to say?
I was just going to say, to me, it seems like karma is actually presenting opportunities of the moment to actually make a decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you have some understanding, you realize that I've been brought to this moment by all these causes and effects. You know, how am I going to react to this situation I find myself in? You know, I may not be able to. You know, again, we'll talk about this some more. The easiest karma to control is body. The next speech is a little bit harder to control. Right now, our mind is impossible to control. And we'll talk about this next week. So at least start, if we want to have some control over our karma, we can start avoiding those actions of body, killing, stealing, and so on. And we'll talk about these next week that most likely would cause negative karma. But it's tough. Yeah, it's really tough. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About not having that choice, you know, predestination
mm-hmm.
Kind of situation. It seems like if we've gone, then I got a little bit more hopeful with Joey about making a decision. You know, because for a while there, I was like, wait a minute, it's flying in the face of neuroplasticity. What about that? We can change it. I like that aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I like
yeah.
the power.
Mm-hmm.
In
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go into this thing that, okay, it's almost like doom.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the mercy of the negative karma. There's no way out there.
And also the positive karma. There's
yeah,
a lot of good positive karma.
The choice.
Yeah. Well, I think positive karma could ripen in a way such that we have choice, that we have a little bit of calm, a little bit of insight. That could be the ripening of positive karma.
So you can see yourself in this mess. For whatever eon brought me here,
mm-hmm.
and I can have the choice that I'm getting out of this.
Yeah, that's what spiritual practice is from the Buddhist point of view.
Yeah.
We're not laughing. I don't know what they're doing.
but yes, because you see, otherwise it's just.
Yeah, right.
I don't like the otherwise.
Yeah, the otherwise is an incorrect interpretation of it.
Yeah, that's all wrong.
That's going into what they say, mm-hmm. nihilism.
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to one extreme.
Right.
In Buddhism, we always talk about the middle way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you feel yourself falling off the cliff here or that way, pull yourself back to the middle way.
Yes, and the choice is there. I like
yeah.
that quote.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if some of us are, and certainly I am, contaminated by some of the ideas that came from my Christian education as a child with some of the ideas that I was presented about it's predestination.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
there was this concept in certain Christian traditions about there was an elect group of people.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you look at the external circumstances of their life, that proved that they were elect.
Yeah.
And, you know, like people who were wealthy and, you know, had high social standing and all this other kind of stuff, that proved that they were among the elect, and these other people
mm-hmm.
over here who were the
yeah.
wretched of the earth, they, no matter what they did, they were going to hell anyway. So, but this, that's how I always thought of predestination from that perspective. But
yeah.
this is not
saying the same thing. Yeah, it's
yeah.
easy. But that's just your karma that you have those imprints on your mind
stream.
Yeah.
Pat. So the thing is, going back to those same frames of reference,
yeah.
suffering feels like punishment.
Suffering feels, okay. That's a loaded question. Pat says, suffering feels like punishment. Yeah.
as you know, you're saying from a Buddhist point of view, it's just cause and effect.
Yeah, from the I mean, who? If
no
you say suffering feels like punishment, who's punishing you?
Good question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Buddhism is saying that's just the result of what you did in the past. You stick your hand in the fire, it's going to burn. You know, that's not punishment. That's just the law of nature. Okay. You go out in the street and stand in front of a speeding car, you will get run over. There is no one who's punishing you. You know, I think of karma as informed knowledge about the consequences of one's actions. You know, if I do this, it's going to cause this. If I do that, it's going to cause that. There's no punishment in it. And we'll talk about that some more when we get to purification. Yeah, I think that's an easy thought to come up, though. Yeah, we think of it as punishment.
I think I must have been really bad.
Yeah, so you're getting into guilt,
yeah.
Right? And there's no word in Buddhism for guilt. There's no guilt, okay? We'll talk about that. We talk about responsibility, but we don't talk about guilt, and we'll talk about that either next week or the week after. Let's see what
One thing to think about the negative is I've heard that high lamas, you know, will, like, celebrate when something bad happens because they burned off a bunch of negative.
Yeah, they rejoice.
It's a very different way than thinking of it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, celebratory to the A, that negative karma is gone. You know,
exactly.
Or I broke my leg or, you know.
Uh-huh, yeah. That's the teachings that are called thought transformation, where you actually rejoice in bad things happening to you because that means you're getting rid of negative karma.
Well,
that would, over time, expand and be even worse in the future.
Don Brown told us a story about an arhat that was constantly beaten on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had reached nirvana, but he was still experiencing things like being beaten and what we would consider suffering.
Yeah.
But he wasn't really suffering. He was just burning off his karma.
Yeah,
but
burning off his last negative karma. He was... He had reached nirvana, but he wasn't enlightened, so that means he still had some negative karma to get rid of. So the more he got rid of, the more happier he'd be. Yeah, so that, I'm just getting closer to enlightenment.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to the last point so that we can finish it. Okay. So no results without the cause, both what I experience now, I caused it, everything. What I experience in the future, I'll create the cause for. Everything I want to experience, I have to create the cause for. It's very active. There's no being passive. Everything I want in the future, I have to create the cause for. That's the only way I'll experience it. Okay. And the fourth one is karma is not lost. Which means we can't take these karmic seeds and brush them under the carpet. We will inevitably experience the results of all our karmic seeds. Okay, even the most minuscule and insignificant ones, we will experience the results of all of that at some time in the future. There's no karma that just kind of falls off. It's not like our consciousness gets so crowded with karmic seeds that there's no room to put any new ones on. There's always room for more. They say we have, 84,000 moments of thought in the finger snap. What is it, Richard? Is that the? Yeah, 84,000, yeah. So each one of those moments in that finger snap, we're creating karmic seeds. There are two qualifiers, which are
purification.
Negative karma can be purified, which in our present state means we can lessen the effect of it by doing certain practices, and we'll talk about that one night. Said when we understand emptiness, see reality directly, we can actually remove negative karma completely from our mind stream. Right now we can only work on lessening it. And
positive karma can be destroyed by anger.
Yeah, anger destroys negative karma. It said when we're angry, anger destroys good karma. It said when we're angry, it's like our mind is on fire, burning up good karma. There's just no room for any virtue in our mind when we're angry. It's just such an all-consuming emotional state. Just a moment of anger burns up to say countless eons of good karma. But purification purifies countless eons of good karma, bad karma. Yeah, well, you got here, yeah, you got a human rebirth, yeah. You're doing pretty good.
Yeah, but just, if I have one moment of anger, it sounds like that sounds so extreme.
I know.
I mean,
yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, how can anybody?
Don't upset. Your consciousness is without beginning, so a couple eons is a finger snap.
But it is hyperbole, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to say that. It's a very dramatic image, I'll put it that way. Okay. Any other comments about that one? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does this come into play where we would say we've all done everything in the past? We've murdered, we've done good things, bad things. So if we're looking at a murderer or someone who has a particular thing that, you know, for them, we've done that too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this gets back to... Yeah, when we, this is another way of when we look at the other people are suffering, you know, if we have an understanding of the teachings, we realize we've been in that situation countless times ourselves. It's not like me looking down at poor you. It's like I have been in that exact same situation, so I know what you're going through. You know, I've caused it for myself, you've caused it for you, so there's, you know, greater compassion.
Is it like the Buddhist sense of the term, this karma, a little different than like the Hindu sense of this, that you're born this way and you should accept being in the case?
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't even try to change that.
Yeah, that would not be a Buddhist point of view. Kind of passive acceptance.
Yeah.
I mean, Buddhism is actually very aspirational in that we always want to be moving towards becoming more compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
And if we find there's something in our spiritual practice or study that seems to be making us less compassionate, that means we've really gone off track. We're always moving towards becoming more compassionate. Okay? Okay. So, the four laws of karma, I think we had a good discussion of those. Let's end with a little bit of meditation. A little bit of review meditation. Just get familiar with the laws a little bit more. Okay. Yeah, Richard?
Yeah, I thought I'd just tell a story. I've been doing a purification practice for a few days in a row, and then I went and was taking some cornbread out of the oven, and I burnt my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And Haman was bringing the cornbread up here, and I was thinking at the time, I said, that's pretty cool, because that could have been, you know, eons in hell, but now somebody up here started rejoicing in my burn.
Yep. A little bit of thought transformation there, definitely. Okay, so begin by checking your posture. Couple deep breaths in and out from the abdomen. And set your motivation. I think we're beginning to get a sense of how important motivation is. So as much as possible, we generate a compassionate, kind, motivation, the wish that everyone be free of suffering. And now just pay attention to your breath for a moment. Place the consciousness on the breath, moving in and out. And we'll do just a brief review meditation, which is a type of concentration meditation, just to review the four laws of karma, becoming familiar with them and placing them in our mind stream. The first law of karma is that karma is definite. Virtuous actions, those motivated by compassion, always lead to happiness. No ifs, ands, or buts. It may not appear that way to us, but always result in happiness. And non-virtuous actions motivated by anger and attachment always lead to suffering. We can't get away with it. Will always experience suffering as a result of those actions. The second law is that karma is expandable. Small karmic seeds, both negative and positive, expand over time. The third law, there is no result without a cause. Everything we are now experiencing is a result of actions in the past. Everything we hope or wish to experience in the future will be the result of actions now. Nothing is random. Nothing just happens. Everything is caused as a result. Nothing just arises spontaneously on its own. And the fourth law is that karmic seeds are not lost. We will inevitably experience their results in the future, though we can affect them by purification and by anger. And you can do a brief dedication now. Acknowledge the positive karmic seeds you've created this evening. And dedicate them to the benefit of all living beings. And as the train leaves, we'll end the class. Okay. So here's the homework, if you can pass this out. And next week we'll talk about We're going to talk about the 10 non-virtuous actions, and then if we have time, we'll get into purification. Oh, thank you. I get a little cough this time of year every year. I've got some karmic predisposition. So, thank you, everyone. We'll see you all next week.